A software patent I've referenced multiple times finally expires this year, bringing back a game feature that's pretty simple to code. Plus, Nintendo announced a new 3DS in North America, but assumes you already have a 3DS. Tonight is January 18th, 2015, and the Bobby Blackwell Show featuring your calls and chat comments is up next. So you would say, even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is that one Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why. It's not because they hate the fans. It's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash. Later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
It's just me tonight. Nobody else on the feed tonight. Rob from Orange Lounge Radio. He's in Seattle right now. Everybody's like cheering and clapping for him as he's going down the street. You know, he's got to fight them off. So because, you know, they all obviously want autographs. They're all extremely happy that he's in Seattle. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminiscing about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us live here on the Voice of Geeks Network, welcome. Head on over to our chat room. It's over at live.vognetwork.com. I'll be trying to read intelligent comments from chat throughout the night. And you can check in just like the four people that tied for first and second place. ActDef and Tiger Claw got in first, and then Raginator and Fifth Dream checked in 1 second later. Like it was... We had to use instant replay to figure out who got in first, but that's the order. So if you can check in, get some points, and participate on the VOG leaderboard, or if you're listening on the podcast feed, you can get the same amount of points. All you got to do is listen for a passphrase that's somewhere in this episode and put that in on the site, and you'll get the same amount of credit. A little bit later on, I'm going to be opening up our Skype line and our toll-free number for you to call in. We've got even more time tonight because there is no Orange Lounge Radio. Our Skype line is Bobby Blackwell Show. That is all one word. Or you can call toll-free in North America, 1-888-36-GAME-1. Or you can contact me on my website, bobbyblackwolf.com. So one of the things I like to do first, or I like to do this on the show when this happens, I like to read comments from previous episodes. You can go over to vognetwork.com. We really encourage you to go to vognetwork.com. For site ranking reasons. There was a game we were looking to review, and we've reviewed from this company before, and they changed their qualifications, and we no longer are big enough. So we really do appreciate people that do go to vognetwork.com and participate with us there, because it helps us with things like that. But I do try to read comments from previous episodes that you can leave on our my episodes, which are all fully sourced. I put all the links of everything that I read is in the episode summary. So if you're wondering, you know, want to go deeper into story or, you know, make sure that I didn't make something up, I show my receipts in the show notes. And Redertainment starts us off 2 weeks ago. He started us off. We were talking about the Sony PSN and how Sony was actually going to be reimbursing people for all the downtime they had over the holidays. And Redertainment says, why should Sony have to pay anything to make up for the outages? If the outages were caused by an outside attack that is criminal in nature, why would the company that was the victim of the attack have to make reparations for it? It's not like Sony was responsible for the attacks. Besides, we've sadly come to expect hacktivist groups to engage in acts that do nothing but annoy the people that they say that they're trying to help. So before I go into the second comment, what a lot of people are saying is that Sony actually is responsible, because this is not the first time this type of attack has been put on Sony servers, and it has not gotten better. And they even had warning. They even actually had, you know, like early in December, the same people that I'm not going to name took down PSN and said, we're gearing up for Christmas Day. And they were back on Christmas Day. And so, like, Sony actually had 3 weeks of warning that a group was going to be doing it. And they did a test run earlier in the month. So a lot of people do blame Sony, because Sony should be trying to protect themselves from this, even though this is a very difficult thing to protect. Redertainment goes on. He says, you could say that the compensation is to make Sony's public image look better to people who experience outages, but the compensation may not help due to a certain dynamic among the current public. Let's take my ISP, for example. My internet works about 90 to 95% of the time. Ask me what I think of my ISP, and you will be met with a long string of compound expletives. My focus is on the 5% of the time that my internet fails me, not the 95% of the time that my internet works. This focusing on the negative is the dynamic I mean. I am sure that I am not alone in focusing on the 5% of bad times as it relates to any number of things, including online services. No matter how much Sony does to try to repair the relationship it has with its customers, many of those customers will still dwell on the 5%. And that's a saying, actually, as a system administrator, and I know we probably have some other IT people that listen to this show. You've probably heard the phrase, there is no such thing as 100% uptime. Uptime, the technical term uptime, is exactly what it really sounds. It's how long a computer has been online. How long has it been up? How long has the server been up without being rebooted or losing connection or anything like that? And even the data center that my previous employer, we used, we had all of our servers co-located. Even they did not guarantee 100% uptime. Nobody guarantees 100% uptime. What data centers actually do is they guarantee 99.9999% uptime. And how many nines are after that decimal is how good they are. That's kind of the metric that you have to look at. But there's no such thing as 100% because anything can happen. Especially if you not Sony and Microsoft, they don't have single points of failures like this. But like my data center at my old company, I really shouldn't say it's my new current company because I don't work there anymore. But my old company, if construction crews killed the fiber line, accidentally cut the fiber line, that data center was offline. Or if they cut both fiber lines, that data center actually had redone. It actually had like three fiber lines going into it from different physical directions. And it would happen that one would get cut. And luckily they had the fallback to the other two. So traffic wasn't impeded, but I mean, there was still maybe a minute or so where they had to switch over to the other fiber. Things like that can happen. And so that's why there's no such thing as 100% uptime. And you don't think about all the times that your internet's working. Other than my modem resetting last week during the show, during Hitstun's call, my internet had not failed me in like a month or two. But I dwell on the 3 minutes that happened last week, and I'm like, oh, my ISP sucks. But it was great the other 40, 50 days or whatever that I had no problem. Sky is in chat. He says he just got back from having a break from dinner. But yes, there's lots of honking and cheering. It's all because Sky is there. They know that Orange Lounge Radio is there in Seattle, and they all want a piece of Rob. SJ100 Matt says, my company has 4 to 6 data centers scattered around. Even we don't have 100% uptime. There's no such thing as 100% uptime. Even VOG doesn't have 100% uptime. And Tiger Claw tells us during that 0.1% where we don't have the uptime. Thank you, Tiger Claw. I do appreciate it. But he is right. There's people will never be satisfied. And there's a lot of people who have zero knowledge of how things actually work, and they just assume that something is easy. And I mean, I've even heard it, when we're talking about, making games or something, I always hear, I'm not a programmer, but it sounds really easy to do. And then they talk about this like really complicated thing it is to program. But to them, it sounds easy because they're not a programmer. And so they don't understand why it's not easy. And it's the same thing with server uptime. If you've never had to deal with a huge server infrastructure with a demanding client and customers where you're losing money every minute or every second that is down, and the pressure it's not easy. It is not easy to be a system administrator, and you're like, oh, it should be easy to keep these up and just to stop these people. If it were easy, it would be done a lot more. And they are not stupid people that work for Sony and Microsoft and even Nintendo in their system administration departments. Their managers, maybe, because we all have that problem. But the actual engineers that are on the front lines are not stupid people. And if they could stop this, they would. ActDev says, people demand satisfaction. It doesn't matter if it's impossible to get said satisfaction. Again, it's entitlement from an unknowing customer. So the other comment I wanted to read was from last week's show. It's from SSJ100 Matt, who's actually in chat as well. He actually talked about two things that I talked about on last week's show. First, on the Oculus Killer, we talked about the 3D head games, the set, game helmet set, whatever. It's something like this that gives VR a bad name to the uninformed consumer. I wonder if Oculus reached out to these bozos about not ruining the entire VR pool for everyone, like what they did with Sony concerning Project Morpheus. I'm sure thought that in reality, it will fail miserably and not much of a damaging effect on the VR market, although the device does remind me of the virtuality device that came out in the 90s. And then he also talked about the VOG Jam, which ended last week. We've got all the entries. I need to still make a post about it, and we need to do a stream playing all the games. He says, I'm loving all the games that were submitted in the jam so far. If only I had the time from work to learn something, that I would have tried and submitted an idea. Also, all games should have a Bobby Blackwolf mode to avoid constantly flipping your vehicle into bottomless pits on the moon. Of course. We should have made that. You have to have a Bobby Blackwolf mode. But then there were actually people that were in the VOG jam that don't listen to this show particularly. They listen to OLR. They're just or they're fans of Cooking with Unity. Some guys that they had on OLR. And they were like, what's Bobby Blackwolf mode? We don't understand this joke. So it's pretty. But maybe that's a future theme. Make a game that has a super easy button. Maybe that would be a theme for a future game. Maybe that would be somebody's idea in the list, and we'll see if it gets picked whenever we do a VOG Jam 2. And about the Oculus Killer, I don't know if Oculus really reached out to them. I don't think anybody really knew these guys existed until CES, but I'm sure they have. And I know that, just to clarify, I don't think Oculus believes that Sony are being bozos or anything, because they actually have been in communication since right when Project Morpheus was announced. And so I do know, because I've actually met the Sony Morpheus, some of the engineers at E3, thanks to Reverend Kyle, getting Rob and myself in to see it in a private room and everything. And they had the utmost respect for the Oculus guys, and that's why they don't even consider themselves competitors, because Morpheus is for consoles and Oculus is for PCs and mobile devices now with the Gear VR. So, they have the utmost respect for each other. And, I hope that everybody else that enters the space will also have respect for each other. But the 3D head thing, it's not even virtual reality. It's a tablet strapped to your face with no glasses or anything like that. So I want to kind of segue into this for people that are listening live. I mentioned this on the podcast last week. It didn't make it on the live show last week, but I edited it in for the podcast listeners. This Thursday night, January 22nd, is yet another Atlanta virtual reality meetup. If you are interested in VR and are in the Atlanta area and want to see things, it's going to be at the same place. It's at the Dave & Buster's on the northwest side of town, up in the Marietta Dave & Buster's. And it's going to start at 6 o'clock with discussions, and then it's going to go from 7:30 to 10 are going to be demos. I'm going to have my Gear VR with my Galaxy Note 4. Showing some of the 3D videos and stuff. I'm going to actually have a little kind of a menu of things that you can experience. And I'll have my DK2 there, and I don't know what I'll run on it. But I'll have both of that stuff there. And other people are going to be there showing off their things. So you can check out, there's a meetup page, but if you search for ATLVR, Atlanta VR, you'll find out information about it. It's this Thursday, January 22nd, starting at 6 o'clock. But demos don't start until 7:30. So with Atlanta traffic, you may need to leave work at 4 to get there by 6. Just saying. So let's talk about some news. Now, this piece of news, this didn't make a lot of headlines or anything, because probably not a lot of people knew about it. You've probably heard me talk about stupid software patents, and I reference a lot of them. And, the Kudos system from Project Gotham Racing. That's actually patented. That system is patented by Microsoft. There's a couple other things that I can't remember off the top of my head, but the other patent I reference a lot, other than the Kudos system, is one that is actually expiring this year. Gamma Sutra reports that... So they're going to start off with the story here, because this actually, it's not a report, it's a blog post. But I think it's – is Onachanbara? Is that how you pronounce the game? It's not fondly remembered. It was released in early 2009 here in the U.S., late 2006 in Japan by D3. So it was an action game in the Dynasty Warriors mold wherein bikini-clad women cut down hordes of zombies with katana swords. The reviews were tepid, but interestingly, most made the same unusual comment. The interactive loading screen, a 2D side-scrolling version of the game, was more fun than the full-scale 3D game that was being loaded. So why do many more notable games simply waste the player's time when the data loads? It's because of Namco. Namco holds a patent on auxiliary games that play while the main game loads. Namco's patent, which is U.S. patent 5718632, go Google that really quickly, was filed in 1995 and thus is set to expire in 2015. So back in 1995, loading screens were familiar to computer gamers, but they were a new annoyance for console gamers raised on Nintendo and Sega cartridges. So most new CD-based games, because we had the PlayStation and the Saturn, displayed a static now loading screen. Some games disguised the loading, such as Castlevania Symphony of the Night's transitional rooms between sections of Dracula's castle, or Resident Evil's distinctive door-opening sequences. Namco's Ridge Racer, on the other hand, quickly loaded a very small, unrelated game, which was the 80s classic Galaxian, that could tide the player over while the PlayStation loaded the much larger Ridge Racer data. It seemed like a great feature for future disc-based games, but Namco took the opportunity to patent the process. Since then, Namco-published games have often featured fun mini-games during loading periods. Other studios, however, have not licensed the process from Namco. As such, games often simply display advice on the static screens or feature ways to hide the loading, such as The Legend of Zelda Wind Waker's vast ocean between playable areas. The patent's period of exclusivity is finally running out on November 27th, 2015. So we can expect to see games with loading screens theoretically on November 28th, but the patent expiration date is only when the publishers can start integrating the idea. Programming an auxiliary game during the patent's exclusive period, even with the intent to publish after the exclusive period, would violate the patent, so it depends on how swiftly a developer can integrate a loading screen into a main game. Now, about Onachanbara, which I think I didn't check chat to see if I'm pronouncing it right, D3 was able to release a game that contained an auxiliary game, but one assumes Namco knew their patent wasn't 100% secure, and it's easy to see why they wouldn't want to fight it out over a relatively small title, and it was simply not worth risking a lawsuit that could invalidate a valuable but vulnerable patent over fees from a modest niche title. Plus, D3 was acquired by Namco shortly afterwards. ActDev says I pronounced it right. Yes! Look at me. So, this is actually going to be kind of neat. And I know that, like, some other games, I think Ridge Racer on the Vita or on the PSP or one of those lets you play Rally X on the loading screen. And everybody's like, why doesn't War Games do this? Well, this is why. Because Namco stopped people from doing that. And finally, starting in 2016, we're going to be able to have auxiliary games on the loading screen again. Now, here's the thing. Loading screens are, you know, if a game is made well, there's no loading screen. Or we're either that or we're just so used to it that we don't notice the loading screens like Mass Effect's elevator or Metroid Prime with the doors opening when you shoot them, you know, so, things like that. So now if they don't want to, you know, make it a seamless transition like they've been forced to since 1995, then, you know, now they can put some kind of other auxiliary game on the loading screen. Now, here's the thing about this, is that the fact that this patent existed probably sped up the development of seamless transitions, because the whole point of the seamless transition was so that, you know, the person playing the game isn't sitting there waiting for something to happen. And if this patent hadn't existed, maybe a couple more developers would have taken the easy way out and just done the auxiliary game on a loading screen. So it's probably, it might be in some sense of the word a good thing that this was not an option for many developers, because then techniques could have been made to have, or techniques have been made to make it more of a seamless transition. But they wouldn't have had the impetus to do that if they could just fall back on this. Dark Tetsuya says, I remember the Galaxian game on the original PlayStation 1 version, and if you beat it before the game loaded, you'd start with extra cars. that's going to take away one of my stories. Then, you know, we still have the kudos story from Project Gotham Racing. But that's going to take away at least one of my stupid patent stories. Or we can, you know, say, hey, it's done. And, hey, I think what does this mean? Like in 4 years, we'll be able to start having the kudos system in other racing games, even though other games have a similar system, especially like Forza Horizon 2 and Forza Horizon 1. They just can't call it kudos. To register participation for this week's episode of the Bobby Blackwolf Show on VogNetwork.com, use the passphrase character. So let's talk a little bit about Nintendo. Nintendo had a Nintendo Direct this week, and they announced a lot of things about what's going to be happening in 2015. And the first thing that they announced was that we're finally getting that new 3DS here in America, in North America. CNET reports that Nintendo announced that the new 3DS XL will arrive in the U.S. on February 13th for $200. Now, there are actually two international versions, the new Nintendo 3DS and the larger screen new Nintendo 3DS XL, but only the XL version is hitting the U.S. for now. So we can only get the bigger version. I don't know if that's because we're just bigger people or we have bigger egos. I don't know. But for whatever reason, we're only getting the XL. The handheld adds a fair amount of hardware updates, improved face tracking 3D, which basically, from what I understand, it actually like will follow your head, and that way, like if you're not looking dead on, it doesn't destroy the 3D. A faster processor, which we've learned is going to help in some games that are being made now. A trackpoint-like second analog mini stick. Two extra shoulder buttons and built-in NFC, which is near-field communication, that will work with Amiibo game figures in upcoming games. It also uses a micro SD card storage instead of SD. So one thing to note is that the micro SD card, you actually have to have a screwdriver, a very special type of screwdriver, to get to that micro SD card. You can't just pop it in and out like you can on a normal 3DS today. So it's going to be kind of difficult to switch that thing out. Negative 1 point to Nintendo on that. The new 3DS XL comes in red or black. Both lack the throwback multicolored buttons that international versions include. And it's a shame because Nintendo's hardware is region locked. So you have to get the one that doesn't look all that great. Now, also, the new 3DS has the same, the one that's not the XL in the international version, has the same features, but also has removable backplates for extra customization, is more pocketable with a larger screen than the current version available here. So the new 3DS regular has a larger screen than the 3DS regular, but you're not going to get it here. You have to get the XL here. So here's the thing that gets me. And this is not something new to international players. This is only new to North America. The new 3DS XL does not come with an AC adapter. That you can't, no. There's no solar power. There's no, you can't put batteries in the thing. You have absolutely zero way to charge your 3DS, your new 3DS XL. You have absolutely no way to charge it if that's all you get. Why they're doing this is because the system is compatible with the older 3DS and the DSi AC adapters. So their thinking is, why should we give you another adapter? Because you already have a 3DS. Well, you know what? Parents aren't going to understand that. And the Nintendo's primary market is families, mainly also younger kids, even though there are a lot of great games that are not for kids on the platform. But parents are going to get this 3DS. They're going to bring it home. And their kid's going to, on birthday, their kid's going to, turn it on and everything, and get to play with it for 2 hours. And then it's going to run out of power. And then they're not going to be able to use it. Because no matter how many warnings you put on the box, no matter how many signs you put in the game store, there's no guarantee that the person selling the game, like the clerk, at whatever game store they're at, is going to tell them, by the way, you're going to need to purchase an additional $10 AC adapter to be able to charge this thing. So that's going to become a huge issue. It's going to be a bigger issue than a lot of us think. They get away with this in Japan and in Europe. And they get away with it very begrudgingly. People are not very happy about it. But Nintendo's like, why should you buy multiple things? And here's why. That way, you know, there are families that have multiple 3DS systems. And, you know, or this could become a secondary 3DS, you know, for another kid. But if you only have one charger between the two of them, now you got to fight over who gets the charger. Unless you put down another $10. And also, you know, here's the other thing that it's going to have. It's going to have the ripple effect. Because, okay, let's say you do buy a new 3DS XL and you had the a 3DS. Well, let's say you want to sell it back. Well, now you don't want to sell back the AC adapter. So now there's going to be a whole lot of used 3DSs that don't include AC adapters. So Nintendo's going to get their money on the AC adapter either way. Either the person's going to buy it with their new 3DS, or the person who's buying a used old 3DS is going to have to buy a new AC adapter or a USB charge cable. There are other things that are out there to supplement it. Ronma says, not really. The sales rep will recommend a charger because that rep will get a spiff on it. I guess that's a retail term. But maybe not at Walmart or Target, where the people who run or are in the video game department generally don't know that much about what they're selling. Maybe at, you know, a more dedicated store they will, but not at the big box retail, you know, places like Walmart and Target, where games are not their primary selling things that they sell, but they are also the largest retailers of games. I think Walmart is the number one retailer of games and game systems, but not all Walmart employees are going to know that they need to try to upsell an AC adapter when they don't know that much about that department in the first place. So there's one more thing that I wanted to talk about that was kind of interesting about the 3DS. This is not a news story. This is a personal observation about this. And it's because I've rented from Gamefly at the suggestion of one of our listeners, who I don't know. Yes, I think he's in chat. Kaijudo really talked up this game. And the game is called Fantasy Life, and I've been playing it on the 3DS. I've rented it from Gamefly. And, you know, been playing it for about the past week. I was actually on a business trip to San Francisco this week and played it on the flight over and things like that. But one thing that I found that's really interesting about it is that I've got the game. It's on the cartridge. It's a physical cartridge. But my progress is not being saved to the cartridge. It's being saved as extra data on my SD card, which means that if I get the new 3DS and maybe I want to, you know, for whatever reason, keep both 3DSs, I can't just switch the cartridge over to the other 3DS and continue my game. I can only play it on the 3DS that it is supposed to be made on. I can't even move the SD card data over to the other card because it's tied to the hardware. And yes, there is a transfer mechanism. You can use it once every 7 days to transfer your entire content from one unit to the other. But you can only do that once every 7 days. And it's kind of a hassle. It takes some time to do. But it's not. There's a couple other games, I believe, that save all their stuff to the SD card of the 3DS and not to the cartridge itself. And that's kind of disturbing because, you know, there are people that have multiple 3DSs or maybe they're trying to play on the same game and just use different save slots, and now they can't. And this is something I expect from games that you download from the eShop because, of course, it's tied to your Nintendo ID. And, you know, that's fine. We're used to that. But this is a game that's on a cartridge. And we're just so conditioned that these cartridges have memory on them to save our games. And so, you know, we can transfer them, you know, we can just put the cartridge in another 3DS and continue where we left off. Whereas with Fantasy Life, if I put the cartridge in another 3DS, it's a brand new game. that kind of sucks for people that do have, you know, families that have multiple 3DSs, but maybe only one, you know, and are trying to play on the same cartridge, same game. It could also be a very good thing because now, you know, so you've got two kids, one copy of the cartridge, they both have 3DSs, they both get their own saved games. So it could be a good thing as well, but it's kind of weird that they'd be doing that, and you know, that when we're so used to the save games being on the cartridge. To be fair, the Vita, all the save games are in the memory. So, to be fair, you know, it's not like, you know, Sony doesn't do the same thing. Sony has done the same thing the entire time. Initially, because they were using UMDs, and now even though they're using a memory card for the game, that you don't save to them. You save to your local system memory. Sky says, I wonder if Target will offer a bundle with or a cheap charger to encourage traffic, Lost Lead or whatever it's called. And Ronma says, Best Buy will do that about the charger. I'm actually considering getting the new 3DS because I still have my launch day original 3DS from launch day. And, you know, the XL screen is pretty. I would get an XL, but I was kind of waiting on this. And since this is going to be able to be compatible with other things and do more things, I may finally upgrade my 3DS. And then I don't know what I'm doing with my original 3DS. I'll figure something out. Fifth Dream does point out with Vita, if you have PlayStation Plus, you can upload the games to your cloud storage, so transferring is not an issue. And he is absolutely right with that. The last little Nintendo thing I want to talk about, which is about limitations of memory, kind of segueing from the little observation I made about Fantasy Life, which, by the way, I am enjoying Fantasy Life. I do like it. I haven't explored a lot of jobs in it, but I really do like it, and it does not take itself seriously at all. It really doesn't. Polygon reports that during the Nintendo Direct, Bill Trennan walked viewers through some of the neat Amiibo-powered features coming to Mario Party 10 when it hits the Wii U on March 20th. So Mario Party 10, the big thing about it, the big gameplay enhancement is because of the way the Wii U is structured. You can now actually have one person playing as Bowser on the gamepad, and then everybody else is playing the normal Mario Party game, and you are actually trying to stop them from winning. So, you know, this comes out in March, and a lot of friendships are going to be lost and ruined by April, because that's what Mario Party does. It destroys friendships. But the features do come with the Amiibos with a painful cost. He actually says, quote, if you decide to use your Super Smash Brothers Amiibo in Mario Party 10, you will need to erase that figure's Smash Brothers Amiibo data, unquote. So we kind of knew this going in, but the chip that's on the Amiibo can only hold one game at a time. So there were a lot of neat things we were thinking would be kind of neat is, you know, oh, so if let's say you have a level 50 Smash Brothers Amiibo, then you use it in Mario Party 10, that gets you some kind of bonus. No, you can't do that. You have to remove that Smash Brothers Amiibo data to be able to use it in Mario Party 10, which I guess they're hoping that people are going to be like, oh, well, now I need to buy multiples of the same Amiibo and have them labeled. This is my Smash Brothers Mario Amiibo. This is my Mario Party Mario Amiibo. That may be what they're hoping for. I think they should, you know, or what they're going to do is in about a year or two, they're going to have the new line of Amiibos, same ones you've already gotten, new Mario, who's in a new pose, new Captain Falcon, who's, you know, wearing tighter spandex or something, and it's going to have the ability to save multiple games, and then you're going to buy it again then. Mario Party 10 will support 9 Amiibo, Mario, Luigi, Peach, Toad, Yoshi, Bowser, Rosalina, Donkey Kong, and Wario. So those are going to be the ones that are coming out for that. Luckily, for Christmas, I got the Wii Fit Trainer before it got discontinued. So I could use that for Smash and then move my Mario one over to Mario Party while I'm losing friendships, because that's what it does. Sky in chat says, I'm over Amiibo. I am too. I actually have not liked my Amiibo are sitting underneath my TV. I've got a Mario. I haven't even taken the Wii Fit Trainer out of the box yet. So I'm a collector, I guess, because it's not out of the packaging. But I haven't really touched them since the first couple days. But they look neat under my TV. SJ Wonder Matt says, Nintendo knows how this works, but wait for the Amiibo exclusive Pokemon game. We're going to take a quick music break on that note, and we'll take your calls. It's going to be just you guys giving comments, calls. There is no OLR tonight because because Seattle is rocking because Sky has come a knocking, I guess. I don't know. That sounded better in my head. We're going to take a quick music break and talk more about this stuff then. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwolf Show here on the Voice of Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com.
If you want some cake, listen to the Bobby Blackwolf Show.
Need a GLaDOS amiibo. GLaDOS could handle multiple games on the amiibo figure at once. Or a potato amiibo, I don't know. If you want to leave a bumper, you do not have to be a computer hell-bent on destroying the Earth. You can actually leave one just by being you. You can send me an MP3 with just your voice to bumpers@bobbyblackwolf.com, or you can call the toll-free number and leave a bumper that way. So the phones are now open. Bobby Blackwolf Show on Skype, 1-888-36-GAME-1, toll-free in North America. You can call in. Talk about anything going on. If you are getting it, we already have a call. So we do already have a call here on the line. Bobby Blackwell Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
This is Pimp Method. I was the one that was trying to call you, but I couldn't hear you through my headset. I had the sound coming from my speakers, and I knew that was not going to work. So I had to back out from the call and actually check up on my settings.
Well, you're here now. I can hear you. What's up, man?
I have two things to talk about. One of them is, once again, Nintendo. Mm-hmm. I really do not like to beat up on them, though, but they screwed up. Mm-hmm. They really screwed up on this. They should have known about parents these days. They already been confused and confused about all this technology ever since I actually gotten my first NES system. I had to hear from my mom about like getting this and getting that and been getting confused, and I would have to politely educate her. Mm-hmm. And then like later on, as a teenager, event on, I would have to be hearing parents going in the Walmart, and then like later on to like the GameStops, mm-hmm. getting confused about getting what game goes with this system. Mm-hmm. They don't screw it up. Mm-hmm. The second part of like Nintendo is that stupid, oh, no, wait a minute, excuse me. About, like, that last statement while I was saying, I was actually referring to like the actual AC adapter, mm-hmm. and also that of an SD card. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous.
Well, and then there's a third thing that's going to be ridiculous. You ready for this? So there's going to be games, Xenoblade Chronicles X, I think, is the one that I know of off the top of my head, that will only work on the new 3DS, but I think the cartridge is going to look exactly the same as current 3DS games. There's number three for you.
I don't know anything about Xenoblade Chronicles, though, but, oh, boy. They need to get with the times, especially with these next-generation consoles. They need to learn that we need more power. Mm-hmm. We need more power. And these games, I'm sorry, audience. I'm very sorry. You may have heard this one like a couple of shows ago. They need to be a little bit more modern with the games. Mm-hmm. They don't have, let's see. They don't have to like put out a GTA, but they need to be a little bit more current. Where's a BioShock? Where's like a modern day Assassin's Creed? Heck, Fez.
But the audience, a lot of their audience has spoken by buying Mario Kart 8 in droves, and buying Super Smash Bros. In droves, and buying Pokemon for the 3DS in droves. I think like Pokemon moved like 1.5 million units. So they're doing something right.
No. Third parties. Go back to Nintendo. They need to go back to their history, back to like the NES and Super NES days. Go throw some money at like Square Enix or like EA or like do some research. Et cetera.
They did, and those like they threw money at Ubisoft when the Wii U launched, and then Ubisoft launched some of their early games, and then it's like, we're not going to do that anymore.
We'll keep throwing money at them. My second point is with these patent leeches or fees, whatever. This is not the only case about like the loading screens. Mm-hmm. Some companies or whatever, I think like one or two companies somehow managed to get the patent for a podcast.
Yes, personal audio.
Yes.
That's the patent.
Years
code.
And years ago. Mm-hmm. And I am a bit concerned about that. Not just for like you, but like, I mean, excuse me, not just for you, but not only for like the gaming community, but just for like a new type of media.
Right. Yeah. The latest I heard on that is that because personal audio went against the biggest podcasters, they went against Adam Carolla. Is kind of the biggest name they went after. And they settled. And from what I kind of gathered, and I haven't looked at this in like a couple months, but it was announced that they had settled, and basically personal audio got nothing. And it's because they knew if it actually does go to trial that they're going to lose it. So they're starting to try to settle with these big companies to try to not let it go to trial. And I think there is a group that is saying, no, we're going to throw enough money and have this go to trial and get this thing thrown out. So, and also this patent has gotten, you know, I can't believe I'm about to say this. It's actually gotten the attention of some lawmakers in Congress, and they're actually thinking about doing some legislation to try to fix the patent system because of this and other really stupid patents. So, there is movement, and it seems like it's going towards podcasters' way, but it is really scary. In the beginning, because I can't afford to pay any licensing fees for the 10 years of podcasting I've been doing.
Licenses?
They are licensing their patent.
Wait.
You can get a license for personal audio to be a podcaster. They do offer the licenses, and it's like, I can't remember what it is. It's like some really, really low number based on your downloads or whatever.
And times that by the hundreds or thousands of podcasters.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. Thank you for actually ruining one of my rants, because I was just about to mention about Anna Carolla and then, like, the other people, including, like, Joe Rogan, though. But I was big shocked about that, though. Mm-hmm. But hi, Dan. You have a good night.
Thank you. It's always good to hear from you.
You're welcome. Hogwash!
There's your hogwash, everybody. We're at it's Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype, 1-888-36-GAME-1, toll-free North America. We are going to see if somebody else wants to call. If you don't, I'm going to call Rob, because Rob actually is available while everybody's, you know, hooting and hollering and cheering because of his arrival. He will take his time away from the throngs of people that want his autograph to speak to us on the show if nobody else wants to call in. But I'm going to give other people a shot to call in. And everybody, and I do want to kind of point this out, because everybody was yelling at me. The actual box that the new 3DS exclusive games are in are going to look different. They are going to have the new logo, and they probably will redesign the cartridge, kind of like how they redesigned they differentiated Game Boy Color games from Game Boy games way back in the day. Game Boy Color games actually were like kind of transparent. You could actually like see the chips inside and stuff. But they still played on the original Game Boy. So we do have another call here on the line. Bobby Blackwell Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
This is Kaijudo.
Kaijudo, what's up, man?
Not much. I'm just curious to know how far did you get in the game Fantasy Life, and had another comment to mention.
Okay, Fantasy Life, let's see. I think my playtime's at 11 hours. I just completed I can't remember if it's chapter 3 or 4. Probably chapter 4, and I'm at level 18. Mercenary is my primary combat class.
Yeah, that's what I picked.
So I think that's where I'm. I just finished the chapter where you get to the desert town.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You're in for a lot of fun. I love that game. I'm still playing it, still to this day, even after you beat it.
Yeah.
You still want to go back in and play it again. And that's very rare for me because normally I've mentioned in the past that I only like to play sandbox games, open world games, because I can play those over and over again. I feel that they're more worth my money than just a story. But this game, even though it does have an ending, I'm like tempted to just turn it on again and play.
Yeah.
It's that much fun for me.
I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, especially when you start to connect online and you do the whole like MMO type deal where you're running around with friends and fighting monsters and just a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to mention was Nintendo. I remember when OLR, when they were doing the their favorite games of 2014. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that you mentioned that I think is the main thing to look at when it comes to Nintendo, it's fun. They just make, you know, especially their first party games. I don't know about third party. I do agree that they are missing a lot when it comes to third party, but I don't necessarily think it's their fault. Mm-hmm. But they just make a lot of fun games, and I think that's the main reason why people, buy the same. You know, they like the Mario Karts, they like the Pokemon, just because those are fun games to play. You know, they just nonstop fun. You know, you get them and you play them and you just have fun with them. I think that's what you need to look at, not necessarily graphic power or, what's the other thing that people look at? The HD. Like, I'm not even that big of a fan of HD. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I like the Nintendo Wii U, and I love playing games on it, but I never got it for the HD. Like, I never felt, oh, these games need to be in HD. And I don't know. I just think there's something. I don't know how to put my finger on it, but I think one of the main problems with some gamers, is just that they believe that, you know, if there aren't any explosions in your game or you're not shooting someone in the face, that your game sucks, which I don't necessarily agree with.
Yeah, and to be fair, you opened your call talking about a third party game on a Nintendo system about how fun it was.
Oh yeah, that's true.
So to be fair, now you're going to find them more on the 3DS than the Wii U, but there are a couple third party games that are wonderful on the Wii U as well. I love the Scribblenauts games, which are available on other platforms, but I played them on the Wii U.
Yeah, I prefer Scribblenauts on the handheld systems. I have Scribblenauts for the PC, but it just doesn't feel. I don't know. To me, it just feels like it's a handheld game. Like there's something about putting that stuff in with your stylus and
that's why it worked on the Wii U so well.
Oh yeah, that's right, because they have the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I'm with you, and it's about the fun and stuff. And Nintendo really gets that. And you know, to be honest, I know you said it's not really that much about the HD. Nintendo's put out some really beautiful stuff. Like Mario Kart 8 is very beautiful, and it's in full HD. So they're getting there, and they know what they have to work with, and they're very good at it. So that argument kind of is starting to go away a little bit. People will still say it. Because it's more, Xbox 360 generation. It's more powerful. It looks better than the Xbox 360, but it doesn't come anywhere near an Xbox One.
Yeah, like I don't consider myself like a art expert, but I think some of the reason why a lot of the Nintendo games look really great and maybe HD or they just look great period is just for their art style. Like they have there's kind of like a uniqueness, like a character to Nintendo in their games that seemed to work. I remember before they even went HD, what was it? Mario Galaxy. Mm-hmm. People love that game for just the way it looks. Like they say it's a pretty game. I think a lot of that is the art style and not so much the power behind it. Not so much the HD. I know that game wasn't in HD, but I'm just saying that like people say that that's still a pretty looking game and it wasn't an HD game.
Well, and I mean, I even go back further. And I'll talk about the generation that had the GameCube, the Xbox, and the PlayStation 2. All three consoles were capable of what was called progressive scan mode, which was basically it was 480p instead of 480i, and it would even go out into widescreen. And the most beautiful game that would show in that 480p widescreen of that era was F-Zero GX. That was the best looking game of that generation, and that, you know, running at that fast frame rate and everything, like it beat out anything the Xbox put out in progressive scan mode. It was beat out anything the PS2 put out in progressive scan mode. And part of that's because of the art style, because they didn't try to make it look so realistic. They cut corners to make it look fast and fluid. And that's more important, I think, in a game, is having fluidity and not dropped frames than having something that looks really great but stutters if there's too much going on the screen.
I agree with you 100%. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yep. And last thing I just want to comment on, I called my GameStop because I'm interested in getting the new 3DS. And they were already sold out of their special bundle. They have a special bundle that they were putting out there with Monster Hunter, which I found out because I was actually interested in buying that because I thought the game came with it.
Right.
But you're just getting the Monster Hunter art on your 3DS, which I could care less about. So I was like, okay, I'll go with the $199 one. I don't care.
Right.
It's a lot cheaper and better. So anyway, I was going with that, and then I found out that they have three games coming out on the 3DS that same day. That's the is it Majora's Mask? That's the Zelda game?
Yes.
And this other game that I'm interested in that uses some of the amiibos, some of the Fire Emblem amiibos, and that's that is it Codename Steam or Steam Code or something?
It's Codename Steam, I think, is what it's called.
Yeah, that game looks like it's a lot of fun. It has replayability, and I'm thinking about picking that one up, and definitely Monster Hunter 4. They can keep their Zelda. I'm not the biggest Zelda fan, but
And Monster Hunter is a third party title.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yep, there you go. But it's still 3DS. Like when I said third party, I was thinking more of the bigger system, the Wii U. Because
right.
I mean, there's really nothing out there. Like I'm happy with my Wii U, and I'm happy with the little bit of games that I do have. Like I'm not the type of person where I have to have like every single game that's out there, or I need a bunch of games for my system. There just has to be at least, I would say, 10 games at the least that would actually get me to buy a game, and I'll be happy with that for like almost a year or a year and a half before I'm like pissed off and screaming that they need more games on their system.
Yeah,
that's all I have to say.
All right. Well, thanks for your call, man. I appreciate it.
No problem.
So that's it. Rob got bumped. We'll talk to him next week. So thanks for being available, Rob. But we're I don't like, even though I could go longer, I like keeping my podcast at about an hour because that's the length of a lot of that's just big and long enough for most people's commutes or a little bit less. So I like to keep it at that length. So even though I could go for a couple more hours, take more calls, I'm going to leave it at that. I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Voice Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com. You can catch us live and interact with the show directly. But in 2 weeks, there will not be a live show because I'm going to be bird watching. There's this really superb owl out there, and I'm going to go bird watching. So I will not have a live show in 2 weeks. Orange Lounge Radio is not having a live show tonight, but they will have a live show in 2 weeks. So you'll still have content here on VOG that week. It's just not going to be me. But we'll be back then. Feel free to leave a voicemail on any topic. We'll leave a bumper use on the show. And the toll-free number, 1-888-36-GAME-1, or you can email me an MP3 to bumpers@bobbyblackwolf.com. And like I said, we will be live next week. It's in 2 weeks. So you can join my Facebook fan page, facebook.com/BobbyBlackWolf, or Twitter @BobbyBlackWolf, or you can submit questions on my website, BobbyBlackWolf.com. Hey, if you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet. But we would not be able to make the live show work without the help of the chatters. So thank you very much, DC Nate, Hecht, Ronma, VHJSNXV, Doomplague, Fifth Dream, Havoc978, Shadow Nexion, ActDef, BaconBits, Bathory, Burr, Sinpoco, DeBlueGuy, Dungeon Buster, Eric RPG, Game Guru, Hitstun, Akuma JP, Kaijudo, Kenzi Cat, Kazan, Melted General, Monster B, MXT, Raginator, Sky, Skinslip, SJ100 Matt, Tiger Claw, Toagak, Zappy, and Zether. So that's it for me. And Sky says I'm not going to get to call their show in 2 weeks because I bumped him. Sorry, Rob. We'll talk more next week. We'll talk a lot next week. See ya. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.